It helps to really think of your offerings in their totality and figure out what that means to you. The offerings are almost invariably going to be content. This is a strategic thinking effort, and non-dues revenue is part of that.
Hi, I'm Christine Shaw, CEO and President of Naylor Association Solutions, and I'm your host of the Association Advisor Podcast. We'll learn from successful association executives, partners, and clients on how to grow membership engagement and non-dues revenue to create a thriving, prosperous, and value-driven association. I invite you to join me in keeping informed and, most importantly, keeping your association profitable. Our goal is to leave you feeling inspired, more confident, and more knowledgeable. This is the Association Advisor Podcast.
Hi, and welcome back to the Association Advisor Podcast, brought to you by Naylor Association Solutions. I'm your host, Christine Shaw, and today's topic is all about content. I'm super excited for this topic because we have a fantastic guest joining me today who is a content strategy expert, Hillary Marsh. Hillary is president and chief strategist of Content Company, a content and digital strategy consultancy that helps associations, nonprofit organizations, and corporations get better results from their content by improving their practices for content creation, governance, management, and promotions. Content Company's clients include the American Bar Association, American Medical Association, and the American College of Cardiology, just to name a few. Some of the things we're going to touch on today are why content is central to an association's existence and how your content strategy should be organized and aligned across your organization, and also how to deliver value and non-dues revenue through your content. We'll also dive into a method Hillary employs called empathy-based personas that just might be the game changer your association needs when building the framework behind what makes a successful content strategy. I'd love to welcome Hillary. Hillary, you have such an amazing background. Would you please share with our listeners what led you to this work and why you're so passionate about it?
Sure. So I started my professional life as a magazine editor. And when the internet came along, I had to figure out how content fit into this new medium. I made my way to associations, and for associations in specific, well, let me just backtrack and say that every organization that's online is a publisher, whether they think of themselves that way or not. And my magazine experience taught me that there's a really valuable place for an editorial role. And so content strategy really is that for any kind of organization. So I'm passionate about helping associations add that lens, add that layer to the work that they do.
Oh, that's fantastic. Yeah, a lot of people I know from the content standpoint had to make that pivot from, you know, when the online strategy came to fruition. So good for you that you've done it. And I also love that you shared about your passion and support of associations. And we know associations are very mission-driven and aim to create value for their members in a lot of ways. So let's dig a little bit more into the role that content specifically plays for associations in delivering the mission and providing solutions to the challenges that people face.
Sure. I used to work for the National Association of Realtors, a giant association. And I realized then that associations are content machines. Really, the work that they do, the products and programs and services and resources that they offer, publications, conferences, original research, really all of the work that they do, advocacy, is content. And so content is how they provide their value to members and to their various audiences and constituencies.
Well, obviously, we agree because that's what we do, and we love to watch content drive that member engagement because it's so important. You know, with that said, with associations, they have to carefully balance the organizational and individual goals and department alignment.
So this is adding on to my previous answer, but the thing about content and the association's value is that the people who create all of those really valuable programs and products and services for members don't think of themselves as content creators. The output of what they do is content. So I really struggled with how to make all of those subject matter experts inside an organization realize that what they do is create content. And so I have coined it as content is the way that our work is manifested in the world. Because when we say content strategy, we don't mean communication department or marketing department or media relations only. We really mean everyone. So a strategy for an organization's content is integrally a part of the strategy for the thing itself. A strategy for the program itself must include a strategy for the content of or about their work.
Yeah. And Hillary, you bring up an excellent point, which is a great segue into, so you're talking about the individual work and then obviously the association's content creation. How does one in an association align both the association's goals and keep the individual department goals while keeping this whole process organized? That I think can be overwhelming. So give us some of your suggestions.
I often refer to content strategy as being like an orchestra conductor for an association. So in an orchestra, if every musician, regardless of how talented they are, if they're playing their own music in their own time, or if every section is playing its own music in its own time at the same time as the other sections, the audience experiences it as cacophony. And yet there's a much deeper and richer experience for an audience at hearing a whole symphony by an orchestra as opposed to just a solo violin, for example. And so an association, if we translate that to the work, the collection of work that the association does, it's the same thing. So if they're not connected, the audience doesn't know where to go first. It doesn't know what to listen to first or pay attention to first. And then we wonder, associations wonder, why aren't they knowing about and using all these things we offer, which we know are valuable to them? And in fact, they're all almost always amazing and relevant and valuable. So there's a few tools and practices that associations can do to connect the individual work to the greater picture. And you would think really that a strategic plan or something would address that, and it kind of does, but then everybody goes off and they do their own piece and they forget to connect back to the core mission and how their individual piece rolls up. So I think that the tools are setting a common voice and tone. So in my work, we call that a message architecture. And sometimes it's part of branding work, but sometimes branding work focuses on the visuals and the graphics and the colors without focusing equally as much on the organization's voice. So that's one piece. Another one is the taxonomy, the tagging of content, so that whatever topic something's about is labeled with the same topic, whether Department X or Y or Z creates it. And the other one is not only a content calendar, but the planning exercise and conversations around that content calendar. So everybody has initiatives or programs that they're working on. So if they publish them in a central organization-wide content calendar and everyone looks at it and talks about it, then everyone will understand, oh, this thing that I'm working on, gosh, that relates really well to that thing that you're working on. We should collaborate on that instead of creating two separate documents, because we all want to explain the issue to the members, and let's explain it together, or you write it and then I'll include it or link to it. So those are the tools I can think of.
Those are really helpful suggestions. And I love, Hillary, that you use the orchestra example, because I think we all can visualize and listen to a beautiful piece of music, but then you know behind the scenes everything that goes on to bring that all together. So that should be a good thing we all keep in the back of our minds as we're doing things, like what's the beautiful musical outcome to be? And if you can remember that, it helps guide you through the process and the practice. So great suggestions. And I love that you talked about tagging, because that shows your online chops that you developed from pivoting to just in print to online, because that's huge. So let's talk about content in terms of being an exclusive member benefit. So as you know, a lot of associations tout their content as this exclusive member benefit, and they keep a lot of that gated or behind a wall that you only get if you're a paid member. However, in your opinion, content should be available and accessible. What approach benefits the association, or why does this benefit the association along with its audience? Can you help us understand a little bit of your beliefs there?
The core of my work is asking questions. And that's what I do all day, is I ask questions. And the two main questions that I ask over and over and over again are, who's your audience and what's your goal? And so if the goal for a particular initiative is making sure that every member sees this thing and uses this thing, then we're probably looking at volume. And the issue is that content behind a firewall gets a fraction of the use of content that's open. And so you're never going to be able to succeed in your goal if you keep content behind the firewall, because that gets into tech issues about how long your website session stays good, and do you remember your login, and what if you're on your home computer versus your work computer or your phone? Do you have your login? Is a member really going to pursue that?
Yeah.
I think the other challenge is that it's usually leadership that wants to keep member content behind a firewall. And I think with the just huge explosion of volume of content out there in the world, the risk of somebody finding and using this content, gosh, we all want that risk in a way, you know? We don't have a problem of too much use of our content. In fact, we have the opposite.
Yeah.
Don't worry that your content's out there, because there's also a lot of other things. Rather, make sure that everyone who might need what you have can find it and use it.
Yeah. And leaning into your tagging example in your online experience, when people are searching, it's much easier for them to find you. So you don't know how many new people and potential new members you could be bringing to your association by ungating that content. So I think that's great advice and a good perspective on it. So thank you for that. Also, let's talk about a method that you've developed for the foundational content strategy and making sure you understand the audience. So I know you described that as empathy-based personas. So talk a little bit about that and how they work in relation to developing value-driven content, please.
Sure. So remember I said I asked those two questions, who's your audience and what's your goal? So knowing your audience isn't a demographic segmentation exercise only. And it's not even, you know, the kind of typical personas that I see all too often, which is, this is Sally. She's 32. She's been in this profession for 3 years. We have these three things for her. That's a very kind of inside out approach to the audience. Empathy-based personas is going much deeper into understanding, who is Sally? What is she motivated for? What are her challenges? What is she afraid of? What does she need? And then how does our work fit into what she's about? So the process starts with basic demographics, and then it asks people to prioritize. Of all the dozen audience stories that we have, which four are the most important?
Oh, I like that.
And it's interesting because when I first learned of this technique, when I worked at the National Association of Realtors, I thought, there is no way. We've got 83 committees and subcommittees and forums. We're a giant organization. There's no way we're going to be able to distill this down to four. And in fact, we did. You know, we did it in person because it was far pre-pandemic, and with voting dots, and there turned out to be, you know, some top ones and then some outliers, and we interwove some of the characteristics of the outliers into the main ones so that we could take a deeper dive into what makes these people tick. So we build them as real human beings with, you know, their motivations and their challenges and all of that. And are they ambitious? Are they in front of a desk? What are they interested in? And then we go through the second part, which is called I've sort of renamed it over time, but I call it an audience engagement journey.
Oh, I like that.
Do they even know about us? Are they, you know, kind of dimly aware? Are they using our stuff? Are they involved with and engaged with us? And then finally, are they kind of our own personal PR agents where they're getting all their peers and colleagues also engaged with us because they find our work so valuable? And those two things together are transformative. So I find that you can validate these with focus groups if you recruit people based on the demographics you identify in the first session. And then you ask them the questions about what messages are the baseline for you, what would be amazing, and how can we help you more? Then we ask them those kinds of questions. And every time I've done this exercise, it always validates when we have a focus group. Not every client has a budget for a focus group, but I assure them that the initial work, which we do with staff, because they've typically interacted with various kinds of members, so they can bring their own member-centric experience with them. And they know other human beings who are like that. They know people who are in their early stages of their careers, whether they are, you know, in that profession or not. So these are folks, for example, who don't know what they don't know yet. So you need to help them understand what their path is going to be, what they should be looking at, you know. So thinking about what human beings in that kind of space are like is super helpful about really being able to put yourself in their shoes when you're creating content for them. And that's the challenge, is people, subject matter experts inside associations, are so good at what they do that they forget that the audience doesn't live in their head.
Mm-hmm.
That the audience really needs what they have, but they don't know the lingo. So we have, for example, people in advocacy putting out emails that say, act now on HR 432B.
And, what's that mean?
Right, exactly. And the issue turns out to be super important for the members to join in a call for action for, but unless you help them understand what's the issue, why is it a threat or important for you to, you know, ask your congressional representative to vote for or against, then they can take action.
Yeah. No, Hillary, it's clear why this is your passion and your calling in life. I love the methodology you created, and you did it in a way to help our listeners understand the process. It's a two-step process in really getting into the minds and the personalities of the potential audience and readers. So that's fantastic. You've done a great job at outlining the content strategy approach, some tools, some tips, everything you do to create your content and align it. Tell me from your perspective, how do you see content as such a driver for non-dues revenue to help support associations' investment in their future?
I mean, honestly, non-dues revenue isn't always the primary focus of the work that my associations do. Mm-hmm. It's the member value that's a greater focus. But I have seen associations repackage a lot of their content in a way that can give it a new life, let's say. So I've seen them do that. There's also the idea of kind of a bite snack meal. So bite snack meal is a content technique where you understand that different people have needs for different levels of depth in the content they consume. And so if you think about not a specific piece of content constructed as a bite snack meal, but a journey sort of through your content as a bite snack meal, that's so interesting, because if the bite is a blog post, the snack might be the detailed report, and the meal is a conference where that's created. So it helps to really think of your offerings in their totality and figure out what that means to you. The offerings are almost invariably going to be content. So while it all manifests itself on the website, this isn't really a website effort. This isn't really a technology effort. This is a strategic thinking effort. And non-dues revenue is part of that. Connecting the products you sell to the products that you offer to members is a real yin-yang there. I don't know if that Makes sense.
No, it does. And, you know, I actually like that you talked about it being the first priority is member value, because member retention is also a big part of this, right? So to first have a strong association, you need to have a strong membership and the membership that you can retain year in, year out. And so your content strategy definitely speaks to that.
Yeah.
And, you know, we all know the benefits that generating extra revenue can help for the associations and what they can invest for the future of their association, whether it's technology or new initiatives or anything that they feel can help be advocacy for their association and their members. You have so much experience in content creation. Obviously, for what we've talked about today, you've definitely stayed ahead of that curve personally, but what would you say we need to be doing now, and what would your suggestions be that we can all do to stay ahead of the curve as we go forward into the future?
I think this is probably a different answer than you might be expecting. But for me, the key to all of this is creating that content strategy and operationalizing it. So making sure that you do what it takes to make it stick. Mm-hmm. And part of that is an HR issue. So when I say content strategy is an HR issue, people are usually, they give me a puzzled look in response. But if those subject matter experts are expected to create content in a way that's going to resonate with the audience, to do that translation we talked about a few minutes ago, then they need the skills to do it. They need the time to do it. And it needs to become part of their job description. And so I think that content strategy is going to be sustainable. The organization really needs to look at its roles and processes to make sure that the people who are supposed to be doing this work have the tools and permission they need, and that it becomes part of what they're evaluated on. So that's not the sexy AI kind of answer, because I don't think this is a AI problem. I think it's a strategic problem that associations really need to focus on that way.
Yeah, you know, the way I translate that from listening to your answer is it needs to be part of your organization's DNA. And it starts with the talent and how you bring that talent into the organization. I think that's a great point that we often overlook, right? And so if you don't fundamentally have that as part of the foundational DNA, it's hard to create strategic content. So that's great.
A few years ago, I co-authored a study for the ASAE Foundation called Content Strategies for a Changing World. That was a study of associations' adoption and maturity in their content strategy work. And there really is a journey that every association goes through in its maturity. And the end stage of its maturity is exactly what we've been talking about. It's that everybody understands what content they have, how long it's supposed to live, who it's for, and why. And, you know, they might organize their content by topic so that if somebody comes with a problem to solve, that they don't have to look at the magazine and the conference section and the advocacy section and this and that and the other. It's organized for them so that it's done with the audience in mind and with their needs in mind. And everybody understands their place in that. So there's not a competition for attention and people lobbying for more space on the homepage, as we see all the time in a website effort. And so everybody has a journey in getting there.
That makes total sense. Yeah, no, thank you for referencing that study. It makes total sense. By the way, Hillary, is there a way listeners can get their hands on that study if they would like to look at it?
Absolutely. I have a bit.ly link that I'll post to you to share. And it's on the ASAE Foundation website, Content Strategies for a Changing World.
Amazing. That's such a great resource and tool. So thanks for sharing that. And, you know, my final question is more fun one. With summer coming up and people like to read, what could you recommend for a book for our guests so they can be learning even more after this episode?
Oh, gosh. Well, this is not beach reading for sure.
Okay.
Two things. One is the Bible of content strategy is called Content Strategy for the Web. And it's by Christina Halverson and Melissa Rock. I have not written a book, but I would think that the collection of articles and things on my website also serve as useful reading, because I do always write with associations in mind. So, yeah.
And we'll be sure to include that link in our episode notes. So thanks for sharing that. And Hillary, if our listeners want to get in touch with you, how can they connect with you after listening to our episode?
So my website is contentcompany.biz. And I've got a newsletter. And I also run, for anyone who's really interested in joining in on content strategy work, I run an online community for content strategy, content strategists. And the URL is content-strategy.com.
Thank you so much. Wow, this has been great. So much information. And we really appreciate your willingness to share all of your knowledge with our audience. And you do a lot of amazing work for the association space and beyond. So thanks for your time today, Hillary. I've really enjoyed having you on as our guest.
Thanks so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Until next time.
Thanks.
Thank you for listening to the Association Advisor Podcast, brought to you by Naylor Association Solutions. If you'd like to access more resources to serve your association needs or join our newsletter, you can visit our website at naylor.com or just click the links in the show notes of this episode. Please be sure to follow us on your favorite podcast listening app, like Spotify, Apple, or wherever you listen to your podcasts, so you won't miss an episode. Also, I'd love to hear from my listeners directly. Feel free to email me at christine.shaw@naylor.com. Until next time, we at Naylor are wishing your association success.